up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Big One Podcast. We are on Twitter at Podcast Big One. Emails podcastbigone@gmail.com. This is a weekly motorsports podcast. We talk a lot of NASCAR, F1, IndyCar, and unfortunately this week we are going to be talking about some very, very sad news. But before we get into that, let's see who we got on the podcast. This has been Baby G bringing you in, and who else do we got on the pod this week?
We got B-Boy as always. Always here. Well, hopefully.
Sponsorship this week. This is a very important one. The Vortex Theory, unfortunately, they sponsored, but they didn't do a whole lot. And
they didn't deliver.
Amazon Prime with some banger coverage of the Coca-Cola 600. Second race of the season for the Amazon guys, and they killed it. And they thought, we're doing so well with our coverage. Stock price is through the roof. We're just going to spread some money around to all of the motorsports podcasts to get the word out that we've still got three more races here on Prime.
This is their second race? I thought it was the first.
Was it the first?
It was their first, yeah. All-Star race was Fox, yeah.
Oh, so, man. Yeah,
this is their first of five.
Amazon. So we've got four more races.
Four more, which is fantastic. We love to hear it.
Even better.
Honestly, and we're gonna get into this about half a second, but they are just so dramatically better than Fox. And they were last year, too. I remember us like chatting about it through Discord and stuff. But like they are so much better than Fox, and it's such a change of pace to get to them. But last year, they didn't have it as dialed in as they do this year. This year, it's like they've been doing it for like 10 years at this point. I mean, they've got the best people talking about the sport, and they have such a good cadence of, let's go down the guys that are sitting by the track and break that down, and let's go back up to the booth guys to cover the race, and then let's go back down and cover this other thing. And then they've got so much good content ready to kind of just like queue up, and I mean, they don't miss anything, which is already a dramatic thing. And we'll talk a little bit more about it, the cup coverage, so I'm going to hold the rest of it. But man, just a really dramatic difference between what we see there and what we see for the truck series still for the rest of the year, because the trucks are on Fox all year, which is just Jesus Christ. Big news this week. Really, really dramatic stuff here. Kyle Busch has passed away, a two-time champion, the all-time winningest driver in the top three national series history. And I'm just going to leave it there, because I think all of his accolades have been spelled out a million times over. We're a weekly podcast, but we're late on the accolades and on the immediate response to this kind of stuff. We're just going to talk a little bit about Kyle Busch and what he meant to us, and a little bit around what this means for silly season and the Cup Series going forward. Baby G, what do you want to chat about here?
Yeah, this is absolutely heartbreaking news. I mean, I had heard that he wasn't feeling all that well and he was in the hospital, and I was actually on the golf course when someone broke this news to me via text. They just go, "Whoa, Kyle Busch," and I was like, yeah, he's in the hospital, but like he's intending to race this weekend. And they go, "Well, he passed away, he's dead." And I was like, oh my God. Like, it's one of those watershed moments where you're just like a hero to so many people. A lot of the news has come out where this is a guy that he had Kyle Busch Motorsports, right? He mm-hmm. has brought a ton of guys up through that garage and that team. And we've got a lot of those guys in the Cup Series now. So big loss for the NASCAR community in general.
Yeah, this is just like you said, I mean, it is one of these moments that you stop and you think about exactly where you were. I think it's hard. I've been a fan for so long, it's hard not to compare it to Dale Earnhardt. I was much younger. I was only 10 years old at the time, but that was my very first Daytona 500. I think I've talked about that on the podcast a couple times before. And that was different because it happened at the racetrack. And I think like in the week away or when they're not at the racetrack, you just don't really think about what could happen in a person's life, right? And you know, a lot of news has come out and a lot of things have come out, and just like you said, I think earlier in the morning we messaged back and forth about him not going to be racing this weekend. And when that happened, I posted that and I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, you know, sometimes guys are sick or whatever. Like Bowman's missed a bunch of races for vertigo, right? Like that's he's not going to die from sepsis from vertigo, right? So like, in my opinion when that happened, I really just kind of glanced past it. But you actually said something. You said, I think you said either, I hope it's not serious, or maybe it is serious or something like that. And it was the first thing that clicked to me that I was like, oh, you're right. It could be. Like, we don't know. Like, he could have fallen at home. You don't know what could, but it's serious enough that 4 days out, they're saying he's not going to race. Come to find out, yeah, he became unresponsive in the Chevy racing simulator. They called the, by the way, all this stuff is so shitty about how TMZ always gets access to these calls and everything, but how they called and said he was coughing up blood. And, you know, I know what sepsis is because I have looked that up before. I watch enough medical dramas or something like that. My dad, who is a big Kyle Busch fan, does not. And he looked it up and he was just like, I could tell, like, him and I reminisced a lot over the weekend and in 5 or 6 days here. I'm still talking about things literally even today. But, like, I could tell how broken up he was just, like, reading how bad sepsis is and just, like, how it destroys your body all of a sudden. And just, yeah, this, not to say, you know, this is exactly what happened, but don't ignore illnesses. They can progress and they can get a lot worse. And that's essentially what happened here. Man, I don't, I barely know what to say. I think we're gonna, like, I want to do a podcast with my dad, and I know you recorded some thoughts for yourself. He's just, Kyle Busch was a guy we loved to hate on this podcast. We invented the whiner of the week in our first season, and I think he won more of those than anyone else, so always gonna be the winningest driver, I guess, even here at the big one. But he was my dad's favorite driver, and him and I shared a birthday, May 2nd, so that was pretty cool. And when he first went to Hendrick, I was a fan of his for 3 years. And then he left and he went to Toyota, and that's why my dad became a fan of him, because my dad likes Toyota and was a Toyota guy outside of the racing world. And to me, this feels, like I said, similar to Dale Earnhardt, but not the same. It feels weird because we lost someone that would have been competing for wins and maybe championships for a number more years. But it actually feels closer to me, specifically like Kobe, because when Kobe Bryant passed, I didn't realize how much I would miss this person or how much it would tear me up and how much I cried that day, the whole race weekend, really, how much I was just wanting to look at things on my phone and, like, be depressed about a driver that I just loved to hate, that I just did not like. Did not like Kobe Bryant. I'm a Celtics fan, so that comes with the territory. But I definitely cried when he died, too. It's tough.
Yeah, it is tough, like you said. And I think, like you said, we've got a lot of thoughts that we're going to release at a later time. But I think at this point we can, you know, it's hard to say move on, but just kind of continue on with the episode and some of the things that came out from Richard Childress and some storylines. And honestly, I think a little bit of healing was done watching some racing for me this weekend. So the first thing we've got here on the storylines is Richard Childress Racing elected to suspend the use of that number 8 and ran the number 33 at Charlotte Motor Speedway and will continue to do that for the rest of the season and beyond. So a statement here from RCR Racing: Kyle Busch was instrumental in the design of RCR's stylized number 8, and it has become synonymous with Kyle and an important symbol for his fans and the NASCAR industry. No one can carry it forward to the level that he did. And then further goes on to say, the number 8 is reserved and ready for Brexton Busch when he is ready to go NASCAR racing. So a pretty powerful statement there out of the Richard Childress camp.
A really good one. And I like almost all of it. I think the thing that scares me the most, and I was too young to realize this when Dale Sr. passed, but like that pressure of Brexton Busch to end up in the 8, and for us to then have the, I guess it's the most similar thing I can think of right now, is the LeBron's son playing in the NBA. Those debates of, like, will this guy deserve it or did he get it because of who his dad is, kind of question. That scares me a little bit. That said, all the drivers speak very fondly of Brexton and his ability, and he wins a lot of races. So for all I know, he is going to be a really good driver, and that would be great to see. I doubt there will be a single person who doesn't root for him on his NASCAR journey or anywhere else if he decides not to go into NASCAR racing. Really rooting for Brexton Busch. Definitely rooting for that whole family. They did a lot of good things. The Bundle of Joy charity is a really, really, really good one. If you've not heard of that one, look that up. But yeah, the couple things that I want to call out here that I think are interesting are just numerology. I don't know why. It's a lot like, what's the shit that girls really like and they read about their Taurus energy? What's that called? Astrology?
Astrology?
Yeah, I'm not an astrology guy, but numerology gets me somehow. It's, I guess, the math in me or something. But some interesting things here about Dale Earnhardt's passing and Kyle Busch's passing. Obviously, both RCR drivers, both racing at the time. The 3 car gets retired until the 29, and then 29 takes over for Kevin Harvick for the rest of the year. 3 races later, the exact car number, Kevin Harvick gets his first win in at Atlanta, and 8 races from Charlotte is Atlanta, where Austin Hill performs incredibly well. So I again, numerology, we got 8 weeks to see if this plays out, but the stars are aligning. That's astrology for you right there. Or is it astronomy? Who knows? but that's a weird numerology thing, and I think there's a lot of other weird nuances between these two, and I feel bad for RCR Racing to go through this a second time, but I feel just as bad for the entire NASCAR community here. But again, we watched some good racing. Let's talk a little bit more about that. First off, first comment here says, Resonant turns in Charlotte the upper and middle lanes. You said you weren't aware that they were doing this since the next gen. Yeah, they have been. And it's been great.
Let's keep doing it. No, the Charlotte track oval is literally... We'll get so into good. This in the Cup Series, but this is my favorite track on the schedule right now, and I am itching to get back there. I may even just pull the trigger on getting out there this fall. Fuck it, dude. Like, the racing's so goddamn good here. To see a playoff race there would be amazing.
You know, and someone...
Not a playoff race, a chase race.
Chase race, yeah, yeah. Someone tweeted this, and I retweeted it from the Podcast Big One account, guys. But someone said, we should be there on the oval twice. We should also go to the Roval, and we should also do it for the All-Star race. And I cannot agree more. The one thing I would add, though, Roval, the shootout. Have the shootout be the Roval before the season begins. It's a nice exhibition-type race, kind of gets us into it. It's more interesting than the like local little short tracks that they've been doing, in my opinion. I would like them to do that. That would be cool. And then, yeah, All-Star race, come on. If the All-Star race was here, that'd be phenomenal racing. Especially if they shorten the format, like we talked about. So let's see what happens. More racing at Charlotte is a good thing. No more losing practice time for consecutive first-time tech fails in trucks. Now last in line the next race. Talk about this one. That's so confusing to me. And is it just in trucks? What? I have so many questions.
Yeah, it's only the truck series. So the thing that was happening a lot is you get these drivers in the truck series that are inexperienced or underfunded guys that are bringing some funding. They're getting an opportunity to race, and their truck fails tech first time, and they would lose practice time, which just doesn't seem fair, right? You've got guys that are looking to learn and grow in their careers and get better, and you're taking their practice time away from them and throwing them straight into like green flag racing. That just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So what they decided to do instead of taking away practice time is they're just going to put them last in line for the next race when they fail in truck. So I didn't look to see, I don't remember when I put this on here, it's been a couple days, but I don't know if that means like they're last in line for the race they were failing tech for or the next race. I would assume it's going to be that they failed. So like the same,
it's gotta be same race. Yeah, same race,
so
for sure.
It might have just been a weirdly worded tweet. So, yeah, I think it's good that there's no reason to take practice away from guys just because their truck failed in tech. Like, you know, put them to the back line at the start of the race, but let them get out there and get those laps logged so that when they're green flag racing, they're not just totally out to lunch.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing, too, when I first read this, I was reading it as, like, that they failed tech going out to practice, and so therefore they lost time as they had to go through a second time. I'm like... That should happen. Like that. I mean, if you need time to fix the truck to get it to regulation, like you should lose practice time until you get ready. Like, we're not going to pause practice until you're ready. But yeah, reading it now the way that you're saying it, perfect, great move. Let's talk about this next one. This one's a bit of a rumor.
Yeah, a bit of a rumor here. So I think Bianchi or Gluck, one of those guys, put this out there that it's strongly now rumored that Riley Herbst is going to Legacy Motor Club. Which would mean that, as people have been expecting, Corey Heim in that Toyota pipeline may be moving over to 2311.
Yeah. It makes sense. I think, like, with the turnover that we've seen at 2311 with the sponsors, they're aligning to this now second era of 2311. The three cars, they've obviously been doing that for 2 years now, but, like, they have the sponsorship that they can get across all three cars. They don't need Riley Herbst's money. I did talk about how teams do sometimes rely on that, having that one guy that's kind of the bell cow, brings in guaranteed money, and the other two are maybe the better racers. Herbst can go do that at Legacy. Not to spite on Eric Jones or John Hunter Nemechek, but obviously, like, Riley Herbst is bringing that money with him, right? So that's cool for them, and better for 2311. Corey Heim in that shop, I mean, they're competing for the championship this year, so I'm not going to try and discount this year. But, like, next year, they could be even better. I mean, Corey Heim is the kind of guy that is going to elevate that race team quite a bit. And, Ty Gibbs took a little while to kind of get into his own. Connor Zilich obviously is taking some time to get into his own. Heim will not be actually, he's performed pretty good this year in the couple races he's done. But I don't think he'll be competing for wins next year. But give him two or three seasons, I think he'll be right there. I mean, we're starting to enter that next generation. Do you feel it? I know who these drivers are. I know who's going to be up front, and he's going to be one of them. So, cool. RFK Racing president Chip Bauer says they will run three cars next year. They hope to buy a charter. If no charter, they will just run open. And they've expressed that to the staff and partners of the team. Thoughts? They've said this a couple times for what it's worth.
They have. Yeah, they're sticking to their guns. They're saying, if we don't get a charter, we don't care. We've got the funding and we've got the sponsorships to run a car as an open car.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. We don't have to get into the details, but there is a financial detriment to running as an open car, right? You don't get as much payout. You don't get as much support, whatever it may be, but they've got Kroger. They've got some other really big name brands behind that RFK Racing
team. Build submarines,
yeah, that's, yeah. I don't know, that one is just one. So confusing to me, I don't get it, but it's out there almost every week on one of those cars, and I love it, but yeah, no problem for RFK, they've got the money, and they're ready to roll with three cars next season, which I love. More cars on the grid, more cars out there, is a better thing for the sport.
Yeah, and I don't know if I just thought this or I talked about it in a previous podcast, so I'm just going to say it again. This is like a clear indication, because the thing that we did talk about is that all three drivers are up on contract at the end of this year, and they do only have those two charters next year. Is this tells me that Brad Keselowski's not done racing for one of two reasons, because he still loves it and he really wants to keep racing, which probably. But the other side of it, too, is I think Brad Keselowski's a fundamental piece of sponsorship deals. He still is the face of this team, even if Buescher is the one that wins more and Priest is, you know, the younger guy. Well, I guess he's not that much younger than Buescher is, but Brad Keselowski is still the bell cow here. And so they're not going to take him away just to have the other two race, but they also don't want to lose the other two because they are good talents and guaranteed that both Buescher and Priest is like definitely on the fence, but I think someone would probably pick him up. I think you race another year, see if you can get the charter this year. Great. If you can't, you try and see if you can get one next year. These things shuffle in and out. I think they will. If they're in the hunt, someone's going to be thinking about it. Someone's going to be looking at the dollar signs going out the door, not coming in the door at the race team. They're going to go, yeah, let's lose a charter. Let's get out of here. Cool. I think that brings us to the end of our storylines. Let's jump into some race recaps. We had a fucking topsy-turvy. Don't go back and listen to the last podcast and my meteorology report. I am not a meteorologist. I'm much better at talking about racing, so listen to that part, I guess. But we had tons of rain. Really fucked up every schedule, and we're going to get into that on the individual races. But we're going to go in the order that the races happened over the weekend. So we'll start with O'Reilly. I'll break down the stages if you want to kind of break down a little bit of the racing action. And we don't have to do racing action, too. This is a long weekend, so we can jump through some stuff. But stage one for O'Reilly, Connor Zilish takes that one. Stage two, Ross Chastain takes that under a rain caution. And then stage three, they don't really race stage three. It's like yellow running laps. And Ross Chastain takes that and wins the race. There was a 4 hour and 21 minute red flag. Was there anything else that happened in this race?
Honestly, bro, not really. I mean,
yeah.
The only thing I can say is, like, I feel sorry for the fans that were there for this O'Reilly race, because a 4 hour, 21 minute red flag, then the racing that they did was totally marred by sprinklage of rain, fog. Mm-hmm. The spotters were saying they couldn't even see the cars on the other side of the track. We at one point had an accident that happened and laid down some oil on the track, and the local spotter in the corner said, "Hey, we've got a car that blew up, but he's down out of the way," so they didn't throw a caution. And then like four or five cars hit the oil, wreck into the wall, and it was just a total mess, right? I don't know that there was any reason to even try to run this O'Reilly race in these conditions, and I'll just leave it at that. Like, it's really unfortunate that on a Crown Jewel weekend like this, the O'Reilly didn't even really get a run at all.
Yeah, and all three types of cars run incredibly well at this track, and it is a shame for the fans. I don't know what you can do for the fans. I'm just going to be perfectly honest here, because like, I've seen a lot of the debates and stuff online about all of these races on the O'Reilly series. I'm like, where are you going to fit this? You're going to do it on Monday, I guess, or Tuesday, whenever it's going to stop raining. And these guys got to go and pack up and start their weekend starting Friday the next week. Like, it's tough on the teams to do that. The fans, Charlotte is obviously like a racing capital. It is the racing capital. And so a lot of the fans are local, sure. But a lot of the fans traveled from out of town. I think some of the ones that came in from out of town were happy to see what they got to see, because the alternative is they saw nothing and they paid for everything, right? So, like, I don't know anyone wins here. The one thing I'm going to say, because we're going to talk about the truck series and it's going to piss me off and I'm going to rant about it, O'Reilly and CW stayed and broadcasted on and off a ton of time here. They put a lot of effort into trying to make this work. They obviously, CW's not like, it's not like they're hosting a lot of other live sports and other things, so it's not like they're bumping up against a lot of other sports, but they were willing to make whatever work. And I saw like a series of tweets where they talked about what the CW network was doing, because there's so much behind the scenes that happens with the TV networks and how much influence they have about when the race is going to start and when it's going to end, and will, you know, the rain starts, can they stay on for another 2 hours or not? Like, that's a back and forth that happens between TV network executives and NASCAR as a sport. And CW apparently was just like, we just want racing. And that's a beautiful thing. It's a great thing to have for them to be like that. So, yeah, sucks all around. Good for Ross Chastain, I guess. He's definitely been, like, sucking wind, I would say, in so many different ways and so many different series. And he did not have a good rest of his weekend. He did the triple header. You know, good for him for getting a rain-shortened win, I guess. Let's talk about Truck Series. Do you want to break down the stages?
Stage 1 winner for the Truck Series, Christian Eckes. Stage 2 winner, Lane Riggs. And your Stage 3 and race winner was Lane Riggs, also in a not-so-final Stage 3.
Yeah, not shortened, not rain-shortened, like, time-shortened. This is weird. Okay, so, like, we have a bunch of notes here, so we'll get into everything. But practice and qualifying are canceled due to rain. The race was postponed first to 8 a.m. Eastern on Saturday. By the way, it was great on my vacation to wake up at 5 o'clock and try and see if the race was going and not know. And then wake up again at 6 and be like, is it going? And then finally seeing, oh, okay. So then they do 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. That doesn't happen either. And then they do 10 a.m. Eastern on Sunday. I'm like, okay, at least it's 7 a.m. here. I can wake up for that one. And then, yeah, watching a shortened race. The reason it was shortened was twofold. One was the network coverage. That is a big piece of it. Again, like I just mentioned, fuck Fox, fucking hate Fox. And I think they are the primary reason that it was shortened to how it was. But the other side of this was that they sold truck tickets and they sold cup tickets to this race, to these races, and they had to kick everyone out between the truck and the cup races. Now, granted, they gave basically 4 hours to do that. I've seen them do it in two. So again, I think the network is the bigger problem, but NASCAR and the truck and the track, and I don't know who the bean counters are here. And I'm saying this as a person that doesn't own stock in SMI or any of these the corporations. But at a certain point, you have to go, our race weekend is fucked, and we're going to do it right by the fans, because that's who's going to show up here in the fall and make us back this money. And you say, if you have cup tickets, you get to come to the truck race. If you had truck tickets, you can still come and you can stay for the cup race, but your seats are going to move. We're going to fucking shuffle you around. We'll put you somewhere else. Fucking make it work. I don't care. Don't kick them out. Just make it work and let people watch that truck race. I can guarantee that there were way less fans that actually bought tickets to the truck race than there were for the cup race. So just fit them all in. They could have done it. There's no way they couldn't have done that. And again, I think the network is the reason it gets shortened. I think the truck guys have come out and said a lot against the network and against, like, you know, everything that happened there, because it is shitty. It's shitty for them. It's shitty for the fans. We not to spoil things, but we didn't see one full race the whole weekend. That's fucking awful. Anyway, let's break down some of the action. What happened out there?
Yeah, you put this one on Eric Brennan doing the race calling, and way better than we've seen in the past. So still bad because of Fox, but this is a guy who he calls a lot of ARCA races. He does some other stuff around the East Coast, and
he's excited. Mentioned that
the announcers were actually at the track. Amazing.
Yeah. Fox that's good too.
Fox sent guys to the track because they were in Charlotte. So a small win there from the Fox team.
Well, and here's the thing too, is like, yeah, they're fucking based out of there, but they don't always do that. Fox is sometimes not at the track. But Eric Brennan at the track also called things before the TV like showed it, right? And I like that. I think it's like, I mean, the Dale Jr. jump scares definitely get me because I'm an anxious person and I'm like always like ready to like have a heart attack. And so when Kyle was like, oh, guys around, and then you haven't seen it yet, you're like, oh God, what happened? But Eric Brennan did that and was really fun. And you only get that if the guy's at the track. There's been a lot of back and forth recently about being at the track or not. That is the difference. And the CW guys will never do it because they're not there and they don't see it. They wait and they react to what they see on TV, which is fine, but it's a different energy. And I think the CW guys do a really great job, by the way. But Eric Brennan, just because he was at the track doesn't mean that he was naturally better, but he is naturally better than, well, I'm not going to say who. All right. So,
yeah, getting into a little bit of the racing action now. So Kyle Busch was technically on the pole for this thing, because if you recall, he won the race at Dover for the trucks, and they did not get a chance to practice or qualify. So having won that race last year, technically on the pole, and Corey Day was in that car. Stage one, some of the action here. Good battle between Eckes and Honeycutt. These guys have been throwing haymakers all season in the truck series, and it just continued here at Charlotte, which I love to see.
Yeah, really, really good. Next point here, Ty Majeski loses power, brings out a caution with 9 to go, setting up a 2-lap shootout. Love the shootouts before the end of stages, because like, it's so interesting to see how hard people are still willing to go for those extra couple points. Some 4-wide action. We actually saw that, I think, across all 3 races. I think I even saw it in O'Reilly. This is a weirdly wide track for you know, a mile and a half. But a wild restart, but Eckes gets it done. He gets by. Well, I guess it was with Caden Honeycutt, and he gets by and gets the stage win. Justin Haley restarts on the front row, but ends up 31st after 2 laps after having a tire go down. Yeah, people were splitting him. Like, he was getting swallowed up, and then he was, like, stuck up against the outside wall. Man, it was tough. But that's that can happen.
The broadcast didn't really announce the fact that this could potentially be a shortened race. I mean, you knew this if you were following along, like, Pockrass on Twitter, but they didn't announce it to the TV broadcast.
They did about an hour before that.
Okay.
They had the text box, and they said it, and then they brought the text box away, and then they didn't bring it up until, like, 15 minutes before, like, on the restart before it got shortened.
So I think they were like, all right, we got to mention this, but we're going to take it away if people come mid-race, because a lot of people would probably be like, we'll turn off.
Exactly, because I think they were worried that they were going to lose people, or people were going to get mad about, like, they, you know, I feel, I guess, for the Fox crew, because, like, it's not their fault. They don't make that choice, but, like, your fucking network did. Stop working for shitty people, I guess. I don't know. Paycheck's a paycheck these days, eh?
Yeah, we're really fired up about this.
Yeah. Luke Baldwin's car blows up and is on fire. I need some exclamation points on there. A restart with 20 to go. Corey Day gets to the inside wall and collects Mini Tyrell. And Lane Riggs wins an uneventful run to the stage 2 end. Yeah, that was a wild moment. I actually forgot about that until I read this again. I watched so much of the truck race kind of silently before leaving the Airbnb to go out hiking. So that was wild.
Stage 3 to wrap this thing up. So we had a caution with 11 laps to go, or 11 minutes to go, excuse me. And immediately I'm like, oh no, we are in deep, deep, deep trouble, guys. Like, we restart with 4.5 minutes to go then. So we're coming down to that noon shot clock, and Chandler Smith tries to side draft Connor Zilich, wrecks himself, essentially ending the race, bringing out a caution. So, like, when you get down to this 11 minutes, 4 minutes, it's, like, no different than any sporting event. The intensity just ramps up at the end, and the guys got way too aggressive. So, honestly, just a really sloppy end to this race, and they just limp to the finish line under caution, and Lane Riggs takes the win. And my comment here is immediately, I am changing the channel, and I'm onto the Indy 500 pre-race coverage.
Well, here's the thing is, like, this was on Fox, right? And then
it was on, FS1.
It was on FS1.
Yep.
They cut over, like, they, so the reason that they ended it was so that they wanted people to cut over to Indy 500. That was because Fox owns both channels, right? That was the reason that they set this the way that they did. And I didn't say that before because I didn't want it to be like an excuse. It's not an excuse, in my opinion. You're cutting this off just to get to pre-race for, yes, it's a huge race and Indy 500 is going to be great, but you couldn't have like made a judgment call here and been like, you know, we have enough laps left. Let's let them race 30 more minutes and get this thing over with on FS1. And if people want to watch the pre-race for the Indy 500, they can fucking go over there. Do it. Yeah, I'm mad. Just so mad about this shit. Fuck it. I hate Fox with such a fiery passion.
Man, we're going to get that bleep button out this week with all these F-bombs over there.
Jeez. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, children. Children work at fucking Fox. Let's go to IndyCar. IndyCar was next on this wild and packed Sunday. Break it down. You're the Indy 500 guy. You're the IndyCar guy for us. Break it down.
Yeah, Indy 500. So really cool pre-race ceremonies for this one. You've got the national anthem, the Indiana, my home, or whatever it's called. Some of that I can do without because I don't really care. Like at a certain point, I'm like, let's go, green flag. But it was cool to see some of that and absolutely massive energy at the track for this 500. Totally sold out grandstands. The snake pit looked like it was popping. And jump right into the racing here because it was absolutely amazing. So,
We have to jump back to Friday, man.
Oh, you want to do that first before we get into the
big stuff? I want to hit that first because I really like it.
All right, you take this one. What are we talking here?
Yeah, we're going to talk the Weenie 500. I didn't watch anything else from Carb Day, but it just happened to work out that, by the way, you posted about it, like, to me 3 hours before that, and I thought I was going to miss it. And we had just gotten back from the only short day that we had. I was up in Olympic National Park, so we were hiking and seeing waterfalls and all kinds of great stuff. But we had just gotten back to the Airbnb and had gotten some food. Had some fry bread tacos, which were fabulous. And as soon as I get back, the Weenie 500 is like ready to go. It was great. My question here for you, just to break it down, New York Dog wins. Don't look up what a New York Dog is because it's actually shitty. It's like sauerkraut and mustard, I think. It's not good. But the Seattle Dog was robbed, man. Like they're going down the backstretch, and it wasn't, who was it? It wasn't the Seattle. It was the Chili Dog, I think, was the one that turns down on the Seattle Dog, and the Seattle Dog reacts, goes to the apron, and ends up like backing out and was like sitting next to last until I think the final straightaway. So my question for you is, is this staged? Like I get that it's all fun, but are they really racing? Like, what's going on here?
I think it's a choreographed entertainment race.
Well, that was the coolest moment of the whole thing, but do you know what a Seattle Dog is?
I have absolutely no idea.
That
incident in the Weenie 500 was a eerily similar incident to something that happened in the 500 itself, which we'll get into once we wrap up our Weenie 500 discussion here.
Okay. Well, we talked a little bit about hot dogs in the podcast last week, so I want to finish this up about hot dogs. The Seattle hot dog, I'm new to the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, and I did not know what this was, but my wife, who's been here for a much longer period of time, also did not know what it was, but I looked it up. It is a grilled hot dog served on a bun, slathered with cream cheese, topped with caramelized onions, often with jalapenos, mustard, or sriracha. Jesus Christ, that's a good dog.
That sounds amazing.
It's, yeah, of the dogs, and like, when I, you know, like I said, New York dog, I didn't actually know what that was. I had to look it up. The chili cheese coney is a top-notch dog, but a Seattle dog? I have yet to have one. But just by reading that description, that sounds insane. And I'm going to have one. I'm going to tell you all about it. So anyway, let's talk Indy 500. Go for it.
Indy 500, like we mentioned in that Weenie 500, a little bit of a turn down and a single car spin. Same thing kind of happens here. Ryan Hunter-Reay loses it on lap 18 and ends the double attempt for Catherine Legg as he swerves up the track after spinning out on his own. And Catherine Legg was doing the right thing. He was down the track, so she stayed high. Mm-hmm. He ends up then coming... He was low. She goes high. He ends up then coming high. She goes low to avoid instead of T-boning him and just loses it. I mean, these guys are going, guys and gals are going 220, 230 miles an hour. One little jerk of the wheel like that, and she just lost the air on that car, spun, and effectively ended her day in the Indy 500 to no fault of her own. So absolutely awful luck there for Catherine Legg. And she was up a number of spots from the start of the race at this point. I want to say she was up six spots, if I remember correctly. So she was working her way through the field with a respectable start. And just, man, I hate this.
Thing I really want to call out here, one, it was lap 18, which they... Well, it was lap 18 that they were doing the tribute, right, to Kyle Busch?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure I had that right. So it was during that lap, and so there was a silent lap for the commentators, and I didn't see this part live. I went back and watched the beginning of the race, so I was rewatching it, but I had already seen on Twitter people blaming Catherine Legg for what had happened there, and I, you know, I believed them because I hadn't seen it yet, and then I saw it, and I went, what fucking misogyny is this bullshit? What the hell is going on here? That is not her fault at all. Like, We're gonna talk about a single fact here about her double, even though we haven't gotten to the cup race yet. She completed more laps than Kyle Larson did in either of his attempts across the two races, and she did not do well in the cup race, okay? I'm not going to say that she... I'm going to pretend that she did, but she didn't do bad, and she also, like, this wasn't her fault. I even made a joke to you about the fact that she had plenty of energy after a short run here, but, like, that wasn't her fault at all. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, some of the action in this one then. So Takuma Sato absolutely just drives right down into Ed Carpenter and totally wrecks him. And Ed Carpenter channeled his inner Tony Stewart here. And, like, he's standing on the track, like, with his, like, finger pointing at him. And the Fox picks this up and he just goes, fuck you, like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. Like, the camera zoomed right in on his face, which was chef's kiss. I mean, it's hella dangerous for Carpenter to be out there as... You know, they're driving past him under caution, but it was like, holy shit, I love that moment. It was peak entertainment.
I definitely thought about the fact that, like, NASCAR, was it last year, they made the rule where, like, if you, or maybe it was 2 years ago, if you do that, they're going to penalize you. Like, they'll give you points, penalties, fines, all that kind of stuff. But I guess IndyCar maybe doesn't have that because I haven't heard anything. But yeah, he deserved it.
Early on in this thing, Connor Daly is driving super well. He takes a 2-for-1 pass, goes to the points, and you can literally hear the roar of the crowd. A local favorite, Indiana native. And then a little bit later in this thing, it kind of settled into, once things calmed down with that Sato issue, the Ryan Hunter-Reay leg issue, they kind of just settled into a rhythm where you don't really want to lead this race early the entire time because you burn so much more gas being out front. So Plo and Dixon basically just traded spots back and forth every other lap for a number of laps. And then the next major incident on this thing was lap 92, Will Power loses his engine on pit exit, which is a very, very unsafe place for this to happen. There's fluids all over the track on that part, so we have weather looming, and we are not halfway yet. So we needed to get to lap 101 for the race to be official. So a little bit of a nervous energy there from the crowd, the announcers, etc., because it took a long time to get those fluids cleaned up.
Yeah. Next point here, Rossi's out of the race as his backup car gets covered in gas. The fueler didn't have it fully engaged and melted parts and pieces. That was scary. That was wild. Really wild. I feel like that's the kind of thing I used to see in NASCAR a lot. And I, you know, and it's not that I watch like a ton of IndyCar these days, but like, I didn't know that that could happen. That was news to me.
Like we said earlier, that red flag did come out for rain on lap 106. You hate to see that, but fortunately, it was not all that long of a red flag. You know, I was watching this thing at home before getting together with some family for a cookout later in the afternoon, and I'm like, all right, red flag. I got time to get in my car. get over there, get settled in, and then watch the rest of the 500. And I'm like, halfway there, I'm like, oh, I should probably just check, you know, the IndyCar Nation channel on Sirius XM. And I'm like, holy shit, they're green already. Like,
yeah,
it didn't take me that long to get into my car and get on the road. So that was fantastic to see that it wasn't an extended red flag for rain. It was like, all right, we had some rain, however much rain, you've got to stop the race in IndyCar. There's the same thing with NASCAR, right? You don't race in rain.
Yep.
Okay, so then let's go through the end of this race. So Pato O'Ward, Felix Rosenqvist, and Dennis Hauger, they get into this off strategy where it's basically these three guys who are in contention for the win. Pato comes in two laps early for his stop. Rosenqvist was able to go a little bit longer. So immediately on the radios, they're going, Pato, you got to save. You got to save. I think they were saying his number was like 74% or something like that. And he was saving. The number was getting bigger and bigger. And then Dennis Hauger, a rookie, comes in on pit road on that same strategy where he's literally in the top three, could win this race, and he speeds. So that's tough, man. I think just that nervous energy as a rookie got him a bit there on pit road.
Definitely.
Kyle Collette then brings out a hit with eight to go. So he hits the wall and we red flag it. So I love this where IndyCar will do a red flag if they know they're at risk of just logging laps and finishing under yellow. So we get going again, and there's a caution with four laps to go, and I'm like, oh no, like four laps, it's just a single car caution, brush the wall. But IndyCar got their shit together, got him collected, and we get a green-white checker with one lap to go.
I want to qualify this. It's a green slash white
checker,
because it was the green and the white at the same time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one lap.
Man, if you have not seen this last lap of this Indy 500, I could watch this on repeat like 1,000 times. Absolute cinema. Felix Rosenqvist and David Malukas, and I don't remember who Rosenqvist's teammate was, but Rosenqvist was literally side by side with his teammate wide open the entire lap. And you just don't do this at Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Yeah.
Like, it's very risky to keep that thing wide open in the short shoots, and he did it. And literally coming off of turn four, Malukas is ahead. I don't know if, I believe it was probably just the draft where Rosenqvist was behind him. He got that draft and literally just outguns and out-engines David Malukas to the line and wins it in the closest finish in Indy 500 history. Absolutely amazing run to the line by Rosenqvist. And I will say, Rosenqvist was going to win this race by a mile if that caution doesn't happen on lap 8 by Kyle Collette. It's literally a runaway. Yeah. He was going to win by 5 or 6 seconds. And I was watching this with some family members, and they're like, this is basically what happens in NASCAR all the time, right? You get this bullshit caution,
and
somebody squeaks out a win, and they don't deserve it. And then when this guy won, like, we literally just jumped up and were like, hell yeah, because it was such a good comeback and win. Mm-hmm. And then someone goes, okay, so that's the guy that was going to win by like a mile, right? I'm like, yeah, that's Rosenqvist. So the guy that deserved to win this race did win it, which I absolutely loved for Felix.
Yeah, a couple of calls I have here, and I actually have a question for you to go along with it, the jump for Malukas, it was Armstrong, I believe,
that was actually bringing them to the
green-white as the leader, and he's the one that gets passed. And after he gets past, Rosenqvist goes on the outside to try and get around his teammate. Like you said, they run side by side. And then in turns three and turns four, and coming out of turn four, it looked like the Tyler Reddick chasing down Kyle Larson like a couple weeks ago, and like Tyler Reddick beating Blaney at Homestead a couple years ago. Like, where you're just like, how the fuck does this guy just have way more horsepower than anyone else? All of a sudden, it's like he hit a boost button. And I understand with the way that these cars are right now that it doesn't take a lot of slipstream. They have to break the slipstream coming down, because it doesn't take a lot for the guy behind you to get a nice slingshot. And that's exactly what happened. So he comes off that corner, stays in the gas, which, you know, he's on the edge of disaster doing that anyway. And same with Armstrong. If Armstrong decides he wants to do the same thing, they're probably going to wreck. And Rosenqvist instead comes off with a ton of speed, so he's gaining like a little bit, but he gets just enough of a tailwind, just enough draft, and uses that to propel him to, like you said, the closest finish in Indy 500 history, which is 100 and how many years are we?
110th running this year.
110. Really crazy. And it's also the race with the most lead changes ever. So a hell of an Indy 500 to have been at or to have watched. We told you that that was going to be a good race. It ended up being probably the best race of the weekend. Last thing that I, like I said, question for you. Rosenquist's final lap, what he had to do to win that, put that side by side with what Tyler Reddick had to do at the Daytona 500 in his final lap. Remember the two moves that he had to make to go outside and then back inside of Elliott to get to the win. Which is more impressive, in your opinion?
Oh, that's tough. They're both so good. They're both so good, but man, I don't know. Like, to have the guts to go wide open at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is notoriously a one groove track, right? You never go side by side in the corners. It's almost unheard of, right? I think we saw it a couple of years ago.
One hurts both people. Yeah.
But I still think the Daytona one by Reddick was just wild. Like, he literally just went for it, right? You can be a little more aggressive in the stock cars. You can sometimes shoot for that gap that isn't even there. And Reddick did that. And I think the instincts that Reddick shows me at times are just like, how is this guy even seeing this? Yeah, it must just be like a feel, like, or something. It's like,
instinct.
It must just slow down for him. And he's like, I'm just going to go for it. And he does it. And he executes on that. This season especially, it seems like so many times that I just think they're head-to-head, man. I would even put them like 1A, 1B, or they're right there.
Same thing. I saw someone post and saying, like, this was one of the greatest, like, driving laps in history. And I said, I don't think it was the best lap this year, but it was very impressive. And I posted the Reddicks on board of the final lap. And when I thought about it, I went back and forth. There's two things that really stick out to me for Rosenquist. Like you said, the outside line is so hard to keep speed, let alone, like, not wreck at speed. And what he did there is just impressive by itself. He didn't have to make a lot of technical moves. He wasn't going inside, outside, like diving through guys like Reddick was, which is really tough. But Daytona, you have so much grip. I mean, like what he was doing, he wasn't about to lose the car doing what he was doing. He was really just like, will I wreck? Like, will I run into the guy that I'm trying to pass here? Like, that was what Reddick's danger was. Rosenquist's danger was, like, the car could step out from under me, or the car underneath me that I'm trying to keep down could step out, and, like, we could both end up in the wall at 200-something miles an hour. Like, that is nuts. And the other thing is, Rosenquist, when he first got to the outside of Armstrong tried to creep back up after he got passed by Malukas, and they do touch wheels.
Oh, yeah,
and
no doubt.
I didn't.
Yep.
I thought he just missed him, like, just barely squeaked it. But if you watch Pato's on board, it's so obvious, like, huge puff of smoke. I mean, they almost just fucking died. Like,
that could have tore up the entire field, yeah.
Immediately, yeah, like, as soon as they went, oh my gosh. So, yeah, I go back and forth. That's both incredibly impressive laps, and this was really, really awesome. Last thing here is Alex Palou was DQ'd afterwards.
Sucks to suck. We got a season, baby, dude.
Good.
The closer these IndyCar standings can stay for like another 5 to 6 races is going to make my Milwaukee Mile doubleheader weekend so much better. Because if the championship is still up for grabs at that point, and we've got 2 points paying races, and then literally the next one after that is the championship finale. That's going to be huge. It's going to bring a lot more fans to the track. The racing is going to be so much more intense. Like, I just need this season to stay tight because it's going to make for an amazing weekend at the Milwaukee Mile. Up next for the IndyCar Series, the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix at 12:30 Eastern on Sunday. Last thing for IndyCar, NTT has extended its entitlement partnership, easy to say, of the IndyCar Series for multiple years.
Quick question. Detroit Grand Prix, that's just a single race now. It's not the doubleheader that it used to be.
Yep, single street race in Detroit.
That's pretty cool. I mean, and it's not like in Detroit. It's kind of on the island.
Between Detroit and
Toronto, yeah. Cool. F1 was next. It was sandwiched between the Cup start and the Indy 500 end. Not a whole lot to call out here, although of the races that I've watched this year, I thought this was the most entertaining. There was the most action and things going on. Russell and Antonelli are, like, at each other's throats now, the two Mercedes drivers, because, like, they know they have the best two cars, and Kimi has won three in a row at this point, and is like the special guest that we had breaking it down. It really is Mercedes's championship to lose right now, and Russell's getting a little bit desperate, and both drivers really sent it in on a couple corners, messed up a couple of times, but Russell ends up with engine trouble and ends up finishing dead last as he's leading. It's where he had the engine trouble. And Kimi Antonelli ends up winning his fourth race in a row. He had zero wins coming into the year and was a rookie last year and won four in a row. It's the shortest period of going from zero to four in F1 history, beating, Lewis Hamilton actually was third on that list. I forget who was second. I think it might have been Schumacher, I think. So yeah, really crazy company to be in. Kimi looks incredible. We, again, with the guest star, when we broke this down, I said that I think Kimi Antonelli looks like the real deal. It's not the same thing as Piastri versus Lando Norris last year. Piastri had shown earlier like he was going to be the better driver for the rest of the year, and then Lando Norris's tenure and veteran status actually shown through, and that's why he ended up winning the driver's title. Kimi looks unbeatable. I Russell has to do crazy shit just to get out in front of him, and so far that has really, Russell's been crashing out because of it. So the other thing that happened, Lando Norris did crash out. So the McLarens still not getting back to where they were. They had one good showing back to the Shadow Realm, I guess, with them. But the big thing here is that Lewis Hamilton had his best finish in a Ferrari. His second podium of the year, second podium in a Ferrari, but a second place finish. Guess what? They're going to a track that the Ferraris do incredibly well at. So look for Leclerc and look for Hamilton. Maybe a 1-2 Ferrari finish. I don't want to put that out in the universe because Ferrari will fuck it up with strategy or something. But could happen, man. I'm loving to see Hamilton back up in there. Again, I don't know if the cards are going to flip enough for Ferrari to maybe win a driver's championship. But if these two can keep their noses clean, Hamilton and Leclerc can actually have Ferrari win a manufacturer's championship for the first time in over a decade, which would be incredible. So we'll see what happens. It's getting a little bit more fun. Also, Hamilton's battle with Max Verstappen in the last 10-ish laps there of the F1 race. Again, best racing I've seen of F1 this year. So it was fun. All right, let's get to the Cup Series. Very emotional Cup Series race. I said we were going to talk about this. Prime coverage was incredible. We started with the somber news. We spent a lot of time on Kyle Busch. We spent some time on, the point of Memorial Day, why we're here, the fact that, Charlotte and NASCAR puts on such a show for the military and for the veterans. And what a balance of these two things, while also talking about racing and what it was going to take to win at what is a crown jewel event. Fucking huge round of applause. Do I have what's her name that was hosting the pre-race? I lost her name. She was incredible. Again, just to balance these things is incredibly hard. Can you imagine Michael Waltrip fucking doing that? not to keep harping on Fox, I guess. But they had a total of 7 hours and 45 minutes of coverage end to end. An hour and a half of pre-race, and it was an hour 10 minutes, I think, of post-race. This is what happens when you're not a network that has to jump to the Indy 500. You're a streaming platform that can just stay streaming as long as you need to until you're done, and that was incredible. They also had the last 74 laps of the race, which would have been longer, by the way. They meant to do the whole final stage, but because of the fucking fuel and whatever on pit lane they had to clean up, they weren't able to do the whole thing. They had 74 laps commercial-free to end the race. That, please, Prime every fucking week if they're going to be doing that. That is supreme, incredible. I want
supreme
that.
Coverage. Oh, I made it. A comment halfway or a quarter of the way through this race that Fox is the sole reason that NASCAR isn't more popular in the United States, because their coverage compared to Prime is downright juvenile.
It's insane. Yeah.
Embarrassing. Not up to snuff in any way, shape, or form. Prime is telling me the storylines. They're covering the battles. They're not zoomed in to the absolute max on the car that's in first place and just following him drive around. They're taking me through the field It's almost like they watching the TV coverage plus a radio broadcast at the same time. It was amazing. Like, absolutely amazing.
That's they did a lot of side-by-side coverage. They did side-by-side coverage to show multiple battles. Yep. Please! That's so easy. They used to be doing that in the early 2000s. Honestly, most of it's because Fox has just cut back their budget so much. And you know what? If you're going to fucking do that, stick to wrestling and stick to football. Everything else you suck at. So, fucking Fox. God damn it. All right, let's break it down. Stage one. Kyle Larson takes stage one. Really was looking like it might be his day very early on. Stage two, though, Denny Hamlin takes over. The Toyotas just take over in general. I think at one point you called it a Toyota gangbang, which is exactly what it was. I think they had the top five at one point. Stage three, Christopher Bell takes that one. But stage four, those Toyotas got beat. Daniel fucking Suarez. That's his middle name. Don't look it up. My amigo, everyone's amigo, wins a rain-shortened Stage 4 and Coke 600 in dramatic emotional fashion. We're going to break down what this means and why it was maybe the most cathartic winner that could have happened on a Kyle Busch Memorial Day race. We'll talk about that one in a second, but you want to break down some of the action for us?
Should we just jump right to the end of this one and then we can sprinkle in a couple ones? Because I think it's more important to talk about the end of this one. So, you know, the rain is moving in hard in mm-hmm. the end of this race. I think it was, you know, around the end of stage three, coming into stage four, you knew rain was, it was basically there. It's just a matter of when, not if. Mm-hmm. So we've got lightning apparently on lap 356. So this is, really near the end of the race here. And a typical lightning hold in NASCAR is 30 minutes. And I'm like, oh no. Like,
this I thought the same thing. As soon as that happened, I was like, we're done. It's over.
Yeah, I literally was like getting ready to shut my TV off. Like, I'm like putting some like my snacks away. I'm getting like, all right, phone's going on the charger.
The combos ready, were away.
Getting ready for bed. And it's like, all of a sudden, I'm like, whoa, like, we're rolling. Like,
yeah.
They were just like, psych, you know, lightning's moving the other way. Apparently, we don't care about safety anymore. But what happened here was Daniel Suarez ended up taking two tires when they did open pit road, which is also weird when you have a lightning hold. Like
pit road, they're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, pit road came open, and Suarez's crew chief, Ryan Sparks, ends up taking two tires and jumps him 13 spots on pit road. So like I said, they did remove that lightning hold and get rolling again. So what did we see then after that?
I was just going to say, my man Sparks is the one that threw that lightning out there. You know that, right? It's in his name. Yeah, he did it. It's a
special ability.
My big call out here is, why is Suarez the only one that took two tires? Like, if Reddick does it, he wins the race. If like, seven other guys do it, like, they win the race. Like anyone could have done this.
Mind-blowing, bro. Mind-blowing that they were the only team to roll the dice on this.
Suarez had two different tire issues. I don't even think we call it out, actually, in all of our notes here. He had two different tire issues across the race. He had one in the first stage very early on. That was fine. He came back from that one. The second one was maybe a loose wheel, and he wasn't sure, and he brought it down and ended up not being actually a big deal at all. They were actually starting to, I think, have an issue with the transaxle. So, like, he had a tough race, but it's 600 miles. You can get rebound a lot. And so his car is not the best. I mean, the Toyotas were by far the class of the field. If any of them take two tires, they win the race. And yet he and Ryan Sparks are the only two that thought, let me take two tires and see what the fuck happens when the rain is here, the lightning is here, and they're the only ones to think about that? That's nuts. That's just maybe conspiracy hat on for a second, but I'm going to allow it. First restart. Larson pushes Suarez on this restart, helping him clear Bell. This actually happens twice. Larson pushes him on both of them. But the first one, he gets him to clear Bell. And basically, Denny Hamlin's the one that kind of gets through. And as he's passing Suarez, he is like nose to his back of his front wheel. And caution. Like, it had to come right when it did. Otherwise, Hamlin's going to now be leading this race. The caution came perfectly. And that was to get us to the next restart, past the lightning. And that's the one where Larson pushes Suarez free. Now it's Bell and Hamlin that are chasing him down. They get together. Both of them have so much closing speed. They could probably, if they don't get together, they could probably split Suarez the next corner and just shoot him through the middle. And the two of them, one of those two, are going to win the race. But the heavens did what they've been doing the whole weekend for Suarez, I guess. Or I guess not even the whole weekend, just in this final, like, 30 minutes. And open up perfectly at the right time before Hamlin or Bell can get back to him. And as the rain starts to come down, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Like, I maybe this is prime coverage, maybe it isn't. Maybe it was just kind of the emotion of everything. But, like, you could see how much rain was coming. And as soon as they were like, I wonder, like, I think Dale Jr. says, like, I wonder how long they're going to wait to figure this out. Like, I'm like, oh, this is over, dude. They ain't going back. Like, they got them out of the cars already. You see how much rain? Oh, and they, when they called it, they had the shot. They were right there on Suarez. His crew's celebrating. The broadcast team didn't even know yet, but his crew is celebrating. They know it's over. What a shot. What a, again, cathartic win. We'll talk a little bit why, but, well, I needed this one, man. This felt great. This felt like a fucking awesome way to end a really long, really long race weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no complaints for me for NASCAR calling this thing, because it rained nonstop after this all night long, all morning, all the next day. There's no way we would even have gotten those last laps in. So they clearly saw that the writing was on the wall. The rain was there and it was not going anywhere. And man, that ballsy call. I don't even know if you call it that, by Ryan Sparks, man. The only guy with his thinking cap on. I think a lot of the other crew chiefs are maybe just zonked out at that point. They're just going through the motions, tired. Like, we need four tires. We're running to the end. And hell yeah, bro. Suarez, just an emotional win for sure. Absolutely emotional win.
And, I mean, here's the last thing to say here is, like, is it the smart call? Like, is Suarez going to win this race if they get three laps of green flag? No, he doesn't.
Nope.
He needs it to go the way that it did, or for it to just open up. If it had opened up immediately, obviously he could have won. That'd have been the Justin Haley way of winning back when he won his one cup race by just being the only guy to not come down pit lane. No, he had to work for this, but he needed it to only last two laps or less, and that's exactly what happened. So some really, again, numerology. I love numerology, and I love just, like, new nuance and circumstance that kind of comes together here. First win for the 7 in the Cup Series since 1996, who was Jeff Bodine. Before that, it was Alan Kulwicki's number, very famously Alan Kulwicki's number, who also died mid-season after winning his championship. The 7 Spire is also the last truck that Kyle Busch won in just a week ago. The team that started in the old Kyle Busch Motorsports building. And for Suarez, it's his first win, his third win overall, but his first win since he beat Kyle Busch by a nose at Atlanta a year and a half ago. So some really crazy just coincidences here. I mean, there's a couple other guys I think that we could have had some storylines here, but Aspire 7 winning, just perfect. Any other comments?
Yeah, last call out for the Cup races. Catherine Legg does complete the second half of the double. So it didn't get, you know, the entire 600 laps, but she finished the race. I think she was 12 laps down or something like that. But, man, in that live fast car, that's like, basically taking third place. Like, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Like, it's amazing that car got it to the finish line, because those cars are not competitive. And well done, Catherine Legg. I mean, she got wiped out in Indy, unfortunately, but she did come here and put on a hell of an effort there in the NASCAR Cup Series Coca-Cola 600.
Like I said, completed more laps than Larson in either one of his attempts. I know one of them, he only got to do one of the two races, so, like, that maybe isn't a fair comparison, but good job, Catherine. Like, I wish you would have done better, but you did the best, I think, that you could with the circumstances that you had, so well done. Whew! Not as long of an episode as I thought it would be with five races to cover, but a good race weekend. Where are we going next? What's going on?
Next track up on the schedule is Nashville Truck Series race, the Float 200 at 8:00 Eastern on Friday night. O'Reilly Series Sports Illustrated Resorts 250 at 7:30 Eastern on Saturday. Cup Series Cracker Barrel 400 at 7:00 Eastern. So taking advantage of those lights at Nashville, which I like to see.
The one call out I have here about Nashville is, this is the speedway, this is the big track. It is worth calling out because
going there as well for their championship.
And they have the road course, the street course, right, for Nashville. Isn't that what they do? Okay.
Not anymore.
You weren't nodding.
Not anymore.
Oh, wait. Nope. Are they at the Speedway,
too?
They go
to the Speedway now. Yep.
The championship's at an oval? Why?
Yeah.
Maybe I knew
this.
It
makes no sense. It makes no sense.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's nuts. Okay, well, they're at the Speedway, and the reason I have to say the Speedway is because the fairgrounds are marching closer to racing, which will be really, really cool. I was down in Nashville back in November last year for my dad's birthday, and we heard them racing at the fairgrounds because we were like, we technically could have walked there from the Airbnb we were at, and man, it would be really, really cool. I know I think I pined for this for like the last 6 or 7 years. It'd be really cool if we could do some kind of like the one weekend we're at the Speedway, and then midweek we do like the short track, like a sprint race where they only do 100 laps or something on a Wednesday night, and then they do the road, the street course on the next Saturday or Sunday. Like, oh man, it'd be so cool, because it's cool that there's three tracks that they could technically do in Nashville, and I'd love to see NASCAR do all of them. But the Speedway is probably the best of the three tracks, and we're going to go there. Last couple winners here, we've only been coming here for a couple years again, but in 2025, we had Ryan Blaney. 2024, we had Joey Logano. 2023, we had Ross Chastain. Be interesting to see if this year's winner ends up smashing the guitar, or at least pretending to smash it in an ode to Kyle Busch when he swept the Nashville races 1 year. But that's about everything we got. You want to read the standings. Now, we're halfway through the regular season, so this is a good standings update.
I was just going to call that out. After 13 races, and we've got the chase starting after race 26, this is interesting on the standings this week. It doesn't show the climbers and droppers, so we'll just kind of roll through things here. Tyler Reddick in first place with 620 points. Second place, Denny Hamlin, 498, still 122 points behind.
Then yeah, he caught up 7 points. So
yeah, creeping up there a little bit, but still, man, that point lead is massive. Third place, Ryan Blaney. Fourth place, Ty Gibbs. Fifth and sixth, we've got Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson. Then we've got Chris Buescher, Christopher Bell, Carson Hocevar, Daniel Suarez, your Coke 600 winner in 10th. 11th place, Brad Keselowski. 12th, William Byron. Then we've got Bubba Wallace, Shane Van Gisbergen, Chase Briscoe, and Ryan Preece rounding out the top 16 chase drivers. And what we should mention is Shane Van Gisbergen had a fantastic
really
Coke 600.
Race.
He took points in all the stages, and I think he finished, did he finish top 10, or was he just outside?
Just
like
outside. I think he
12th?
Finished 11th. Yeah.
Yeah. So 11th. Amazing, amazing drive by SVG. Mm-hmm. And he was fun to watch in that race. He was just ripping the top, which was really cool to see. So what do you got for callouts here on the Cup Series standings?
Yeah, I'll say like Larson looked like the only Chevy, by the way, that was worth anything. And then Shane Gisbergen, which I don't know how he's doing that in a track house car, because those things are shit. So, yeah, Tyler Reddick's lead's nuts right now. If you were going to tell me he's going to be leading by 120 points over second place and 170 points over third halfway through the regular season, I'd tell you you're fucking nuts. That's insane. I also saw something where Tyler Reddick has had 7 of the full-time drivers have not actually beaten Tyler Reddick in a race so far this year, which is nuts too. Let's see, call out all of the winners are in the playoffs, so you know, or in the chase, I should say. So if we were using the playoff win and in, still working, still happening the way it is. Chase Briscoe, solidly in. We'll see if he could stay in for multiple weeks this time. He had a good race going too, wrecked out in stage 4, and I don't know whose fault that was, might have been his fault, but, Ryan Preece in, Cindric out. Cindric, man, had a really good car and wrecked early, lost a lot of points there. Joey Logano still outside, it's gonna keep happening. Yeah, I don't know, I don't really have a lot of call-outs here. Ross Chastain, man, when's he gonna pick it up? Shane Van Gisbergen is making him look bad.
Yeah, he's making him look real bad. That's not good. That's not good for Chastain. And my one call out here is Chris Buescher in 7th. Not a lot of laps led. He's only got 68 laps led. But if you look at his top 10s, he's got 6. His top 5s, he's got 2. And he's been picking up stage points all over the place. So stage points matter more than ever.
I was glad to see. I know I called this out last weekend, and I was saying like who I thought would win, and I just called out all the Toyotas, so I think I was mostly right, but then I was wrong about the winner, I guess. But Christopher Bell finally had a complete race. Good for him. I think he moved up from like 11th in points up to 8th after getting stage points in every single stage, and finally finishing a race, which is really good. But like, yeah, just like you called out, Chris Buescher's ahead of him in points, and that's just what consistency can do for you. Even though Christopher Bell has led. Was that 6 times as many laps as Chris Buescher? So, Daniel Suarez with that win puts him right next to Josevar. Those two Spire guys doing great, 9th and 10th in points. Love to see it. Again, keeps the seat really, really hot for Michael McDowell in that 71, sitting back there in 20th. There is another rumor, by the way. We didn't even talk about this, but like, there is another rumor that Jesse Love is not getting a lot of love from RCR these days, and that Austin Hill. It remains to be seen what they're going to do with the rest of the season on the 33, but Austin Hill is going to be the guy that continues to run that car, at least for now, because he's the guy that will maybe take that ride next year, not Jesse Love. And I don't know why, because Jesse Love is probably the better driver, but also there's a rumor that Jesse Love might be the one going into this 71 car next year. So we'll see, but that's the current rumors that he may be going to Spire. And with Spire's upward performance, they add O'Reilly champion into the stable with Carson Hosevar and Daniel Suarez, who is having a career year right now. That could be a really good team next year. That's definitely your second Chevy team over behind Hendrick. So, cool. Take us out.
Yeah, thank you for sticking with us. This was a bit of a tough episode to get through here on the Big One podcast. I mean, you never want to hear a death of anybody, nuts, right? But a guy who was as pivotal in a sport as Kyle Busch was very, very tough for the fans, tough for us, tough for the NASCAR community as a whole. And I guess the one thing is, I mean, blessed that it, you know, everybody was there to support him in Charlotte, right? It's their home track. Mm-hmm. Brexton, what's his daughter's name? Lennox. Yep. And
Samantha.
Jeez, this is tough. I mean, they were there at the track, and not a lot of people knew they were going to be there. So that was a really, really special moment before the race. I mean, just the entire garage supporting them, the fans supporting them, the world was supporting them, to be completely honest. I've seen stuff on social media. I have friends who know I'm into racing, and they saw that this happened. Like, it's just like, it's one of those things where it transcended the motorsports world. Mm-hmm. And you really just see what that meant. So, you know, thank you for listening to us here on the Big One Podcast. Emails, podcastbigone@gmail.com, Twitter @podcastbigone, and we will pour out some emotions for you guys on some special episodes and some special stories about Kyle Busch. So looking forward to that, and we'll be right back at it next week. This has been Baby G.
This has been B-Boy. Final PS notes. Steve O'Donnell, great job on the speech. Looks like the perfect guy to be leading NASCAR. Brexton being strong for his family was great to see. Kurt Busch laid all those flowers, and Amazon Prime's way that they took us out of 7 hours and 45 minutes of coverage was to show that all 8 of those flowers laid on the number 8 in the infield of Charlotte Motor Speedway were still there after jet dryers and an entire NASCAR race happened. All 8 roses still laid exactly where they were laid. Incredible. That's a great way to go out. Let's go out.